Aisling, we're going to move on because there was the Health Committee was hearing from people talking about long COVID today and the difficulties with being believed, defining what it is, how it should be treated. It was quite a full hearing and a number of stakeholders. The LCAI, the Long
COVID Advocacy Ireland Group.
Who are they and what do they have to say?
Yeah, so they're kind of a collection of advocates around long COVID, many of them actually having long COVID themselves. So you can understand, I suppose, how it's difficult for them to collate, you know, as a group and then also to present in front of the committee. Just one of them remarked, and I suppose this kind of demonstrates the effect of long COVID, that the hearing that this afternoon, you know, talking to politicians for 2 hours kind of live was actually going to take it out of them for a week, such as the issue with the chronic fatigue that they face in some cases. Now, forgive me if I don't properly define long COVID, because actually it is quite hard to define, we heard today. It's hard to diagnose, and it can include a list of up to, I think, 200 symptoms, including exhaustion, muscle pain, joint pain and cognitive dysfunction. And I suppose,
also known as brain fog.
Yes, and I suppose I don't want to belittle it by even just calling it brain fog, but that is neurological symptoms is what the group today kind of put it under as an umbrella term. But as I said, they're a collection of advocates. They presented today in front of the Health Committee, and the Health Committee, from hearing them, I think are quite concerned about maybe the possible dearth in care that's happening here for these patients. But I think, you know, a lot of what the long COVID advocates talked about can be seen in other areas of the health service, in other diseases, in other you know, areas where people aren't maybe being seen in the way that they think they should, and the way the best possible practice of care would be. So essentially they were talking about, we do have long COVID, we have 6 long COVID clinics in the country, and we have 8 post-acute COVID clinics. So essentially people can go to their GP, and if they have had COVID at one point and, you know, they are suffering symptoms that they think is long COVID, they can go get it and their GP can refer them, and then they will be seen at the long COVID clinic. But essentially what the advocates were saying today, that in some cases people are waiting for 9 months for an appointment, only to have only a 15 minute appointment with the consultant, who kind of just said, oh, you have cardiac and respiratory issues, and kind of sent them on their jolly way. But essentially they're saying about how even at the first hurdle with GPs, people are often finding that they called it being gaslit by medical professionals, saying, oh, well, you're just a bit stressed at work and that's why you have brain fog and this kind of thing. And that pattern came up, and it is quite sad to hear about. I think everyone on the Health Committee was quite taken with the testimony from the long COVID advocates. But the problem with it is that there isn't enough study done into this particular disease, into this particular impact of COVID, and in that way, it is presented as anecdotal evidence. They talked about how they, you know, they're, as I said, just a collection of advocates. They don't record how many people come to them. You know, they're not an agency of any description. They talked about how potentially 350,000 people in Ireland could have long COVID, because we had, I think, over 3 million infections. And given the WHO's calculation of the of that potentially 10% of people who were infected could have had long COVID, that brings them to the figure of 350,000 people. But that is quite a staggering number of people when you think about it. Now, later on in the committee, so that all being said, everything that we heard from the long COVID advocates, later on in the afternoon, the Health Committee also heard from the HSE talking about what they were doing, I suppose, to help these people in this situation. And actually, interesting, Dr. Brian Kent, a HSE consultant, a respiratory physician, he told the committee that actually defining long COVID as a single disease entity is challenging, because we don't at the moment know why people who have long COVID get it.
Let's hear
in
from him,
because
we have a clip of Brian Kent, the consultant respiratory physician with the HSE, here.
We know less than we need to know about this disorder. What we do know is that the majority of people who have symptoms at 3 months will thankfully have fewer or no symptoms potentially by 12 months. Data from the UK would suggest that the number of people who have symptoms at 3 months will be approximately half by 12 months. So most people will get better. But what we are not good at, and what we don't have, our ability to prognosticate when we first meet the person is very limited. So when somebody walks into my clinic room or walks into Kieran's clinic room and we're talking to them about their symptoms, it's difficult for us to estimate at that point in time whether in 12 months' time they're going to be fine or whether they're going to continue to have significant and debilitating symptoms.
So a lot of unknown unknowns. That's even coming from the HSE. Just finally, Aisling, will you remind us of the numbers, what the LCAI had to say about the number of people they believe to be affected by it and how those estimates are arrived
at?
So
they're talking about, so it's based on the number of infections. So if we had 3 million infections, then 10% of that would be 350,000 people. But as I said, a staggering number. And they don't know how many people are affected with it. And what really underlined, I suppose, the fact that we really know very little about this is that the HSE had no data to present to the committee as to what was going on and who had long COVID, who was diagnosed, who was a potential diagnosis, who was even visiting the clinic, who was referred. And Roisin Shorthall, the Social Democrats' health spokesperson, really underlined this by saying she had asked a PQ a couple of weeks ago where she asked, can I get the data like on what's going on with long COVID? And they were like, oh, we actually don't collect it. We contacted each of the hospitals and they're not even collecting it. It's on individual case files. But what use is that if we can't tell the trends? We don't know how many people are referred, how many people are then diagnosed. So we're still in the dark. And then also, there is one study that the HSE kept bringing up that they had initiated called this FADA, long study.
Follow up after disease acquisition survey. That's what FADA stands for.
Yes. The survey, they were saying, actually, they didn't even get enough respondents to it. So it's not going to be indicative of anything. So we're still in the dark about it. All and right. That was definitely... that frustration was portrayed at the health committee by politicians.
Duncan Smith, as Aisling was saying there, this FADA survey, they asked nearly 50,000 people to participate, and about 10% though of people agreed to participate, about 5,000 people. But it says that it effectively says that it's very hard to find the correct data to work with. I mean, the HSE cited figures themselves saying that it could be anywhere from 1.8% of people to 8.3% suffering from it, based on other studies, up to 15 to 53% suffering from it. So there's a lot that isn't known about it.
Yeah, indeed there is. And there are obviously some clinical challenges here, but there are things that could be done that aren't being done. Like, we have the acute clinics, but we have massive waiting times for people to actually get their appointment. When they get them, the appointments can be short. And as Aisling said, the appointments themselves, the patients themselves can feel that they've been disrespected or gaslit, not believed. It's a huge issue in relation to long COVID. So, I mean, look, the medical professionals in this country and all over the world know this is a disorder, it's a condition, it's an illness. It can be difficult to define, but it's there. But the HSE not gathering this data and collating it, I think they're letting the country down insofar as it's like they've lost interest in COVID. We had a quite a spectacular response in terms of vaccinations and treatments and everyone pulling together.
Sure, I'm sure they would argue that the near 50,000 people they asked to participate in a survey would indicate that they do want to know. They are trying to get to the bottom of it, but only 10% of those people agreed to come forward.
Yeah, look, getting people to respond to surveys. But if you it's difficult in the best of times. But if you read the opening statements, I didn't get to attend clinic at the committee this morning. But if you read the opening statements, you will see from people who are suffering with long COVID that sometimes doing the most very basic things, like having a shower, which was one of the testimonies, can leave that person just devastated for the rest of the day, heart palpitations, total exhaustion. So you're asking people who could be suffering from these conditions to actually go out and fill out a survey can be quite difficult, you know. So there is a complexity around this, you know, and whilst we can give some understanding to the medical professionals in terms of just trying to, you know, understand it better and provide clinical responses better, you know, there is a sense that from the LCAI and people who are suffering with long COVID that they're not being believed and it's taking too long for them to get assessed.
That point has been made a few times about people feeling they're not being believed or dealt with less than seriously. And that's, you know, as I say, in the absence of a study, that's anecdotal. But Dr. Jack Lambert, who's a professor of infectious diseases in the UCD School of Medicine, speaking in a personal capacity on Morning Ireland this morning, gave his view as to why that might be. And he believes it comes from the education of GPs. Let's hear from him.
We haven't trained people. People don't have an understanding. GPs don't have an understanding. There's supposed to be training programs. The HSE says they're training GPs, but when pushed, they basically says, oh, that's not our job. That's the job of the ICGP. And the HSE, as of my understanding, have put a three-page kind of memo into one of the GP bulletins, and that's their idea training. So no, we do need to train up GPs. We need to train up the clinics. We need to put together guidelines for management, and none of that has been done.
Mary Siri Carney, what should they be training GPs in if there's an absence of knowledge about long COVID in the first place?
Well, I wouldn't presume to advise doctors on how they should be trained, but it would strike me that if you were to go about it, the coincidence of someone appearing with perhaps random a random set from a collection of symptoms, and the coincidence of that with the previous COVID would maybe indicate that there is a long COVID experience going on. So looking at that, advising on that, I think one positive out of today is the fact that we're talking about it tonight. It's been talked about on all the radio stations today. The legitimacy of the suffering of these individuals is now brought out into the open and is in the public discourse, because it's reminiscent to me of ME. It was about 30 years ago, and people were accused at the time of being lazy, you know, oh, they were tired, they weren't bothered to go to work, they weren't this, that, they weren't the... They were dismissed in exactly the same narrative of something that was terribly debilitating. So having a legitimacy, saying, look, there is a long COVID, we have had clinics, but at the same time, when somebody presents to a GP and they have these random, and yet they're within a group of symptoms and the coincidence of COVID, surely that should be right. Indicative that this should be taken seriously.
Nessa Harrigan, Mary Siri Carney mentioned there people being treated less than seriously and effectively being suspected of shirking work. That could be part of the reluctance to define long COVID, to believe in long COVID as a recognisable illness for the purposes of being signed off by an occupational doctor for long-term sick benefit. Does that explain some of the reluctance to tackle it?
I mean, I don't like to ascribe that kind of malign thinking to the department, but I have to say, like, some of us have been raising the issue of the occupational injury scheme for long COVID for quite a while now. And I was interested actually to hear from the advocates today saying that, you know, there is a higher incidence amongst women.
What about the issue over the long COVID payment, for example? Does that support the idea that somehow there was a sort of a view that, you know, it doesn't last that long? It couldn't last that long.
Well, we don't have a huge amount of data. The data that we do have suggests that for the vast majority of people who do experience long COVID, not just kind of post-infection, firing, like tiredness or fatigue, but who actually have long COVID, it lasts generally between 3 and 6 months. But there is a cohort for whom it goes on longer and can be for life. And certainly, we have good legislation in this country for people who have been injured in the course of their work. And what we heard this morning is that the highest incidence of long COVID is amongst healthcare workers. And then the next highest incidence, and of course, the data is not fully there. But from what the advocates understand is that the highest incidence is amongst healthcare workers and the next highest incidence is amongst teachers. And so you can see very clearly there that it's quite likely that people who are experiencing long COVID there, but they contracted it at work. So people might have contracted COVID multiple times in their workplace. And the legislation we have right now is already quite broad. Like, it takes in everything from like eye conditions like nystagmus that you might get through mining, for example, or poisoning in kind of industry. So we have this like quite broad spectrum legislation that allows for occupational injury. And I really, really think, and certainly the minister has heard this, certainly from me, and I know from other reps as well, that long COVID has to be in there for the very small cohort of people who go over the 6 months, over the 12 months, and might be dealing with it for life.
Duncan Smith.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Nessa has just said there. I mean, this is an occupational illness that's been contracted mainly at work. And you do know, we've all dealt with through our local work and through our clinics and contacts with people who are really debilitated since 2020 to now, and probably for life. They can't see an end to this. So, you know, there is space. And I think, you know, an extension of the long COVID payment, giving us time, this year to get this into the occupational illness scheme, I think is where we should be at. And on the testimony of the committee today and the work that's been done by the advocacy groups, I think that's something that should be done as soon as possible. I think there's enough data there to at least get it to that stage.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to have a look at the issue of disability supports after this.
The Late Debate with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.